96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You have to be strong in today's world.
Strong.
Keep your focus and
up.
What you believe in, how to achieve all your dreams.
Hey.
Keep moving forward. Never accept less than who you are. Live your best life.
Hey.
Be strong and free. It's the Hits Back.
Hey.
The Hits Back with Naja Black is sponsored by the Cancer Treatment Centers of America, Baha Retreat and Spa, Kalina Financial Advisors Limited, J.S. Johnson, Central Bank, and the Water and Sewage Corporation.
Welcome to the Hit Back with Naja Black. I'm Lester Alcock sitting in for the great Naja Black, and I want to welcome you to the show. You know, looking forward to having a great conversation with you today. You know, today we're going to be talking about, if you had some advice to give to the new government, what would it be? And secondly, what is this mindset now of this new electorate now? So since 2002, we have been changing governments every 5 years. I'm trying to wrap my mind around what's going on in our minds. Every 5 years now, we acting like the late Elizabeth. I'm not going to keep you long. That's how the Bahamian electorate is now acting. So I want to engage you this morning on number one, helping me to tap into this mindset. What's going on with this mindset? And then if you had a bit of advice to give to this incoming government, what would that advice be? Because the way I see our problems in Nassau, in this country, is really our country. I think we've got like four really interconnected problems that I don't know if most governments can just wrap their minds around it. So for instance, I mean, I think the biggest problem we've got in this country is just the whole political mindset. You know, a government would be in the government. So you know, in 2017, the administration won a huge majority. And in a couple of months, we were already bored with them because essentially they weren't giving us what we wanted. And I think a huge mistake that I see all over the last, I would say from 1992 to now, only one government, I think, got the first 100 days right. And that was Hubert Ingraham. Hubert Ingraham, in his first 100 days, he got a couple of things right. The first thing he did in 1992 was he put capital ministers pay back to where it was. And then he did the radio station thing. You know, he started off his government right. Everybody after that, you know what mistake they made? They started off with the budget. They started off borrowing. They started off doing some nonsense not related to the campaign. And I don't know why governments just missed the obvious. The very first thing you do, the very first act you make happen in parliament, that's going to set the tone for your administration. One of the things that made Barack Obama such an incredible leader was the first thing he did when he became president of the United States. He made sure that men and women were paid equally. He passed an act to that effect. I think it was the Lilly Ledbetter Act. I want you to just think about that for a moment. Because we talk about the first 100 days, but what we forget is it's not so much the first 100 days, it's the very first act of a government that matters more than anything else they'll do. Because why? That sets the tone. Do you remember all the fanfare that came in after the 2017 election and why that administration struggled so much? They didn't do anything about the 2017 election campaign. It was like that campaign didn't exist. They just started doing whatever they were thinking about doing. Because the 2017 campaign was really about four things. It was about a new approach to governance. It was about dealing with core corruption. It was about fixed dates for election, and it was about this idea that something new was happening. And folks, we got none of that. I think the very first thing they did was something to do with the spy bill, and then after the spy bill, it was the economic enterprise bill. It was just a like straight up disaster, for the most part. So I'd be curious to see what this new administration does. I'd be curious to see what is the very first thing that they do, the very first thing that will set the tone for what a new day means. And I'm really curious to see that happen. So here's what I'm saying, and here's what I'm thinking is the four greatest problems that we're going to face as a nation. And I'd want you to chime in with your four. The number to call if you want in on this conversation is 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. The text line, 422-4796. Once again, 4259, 325-4316. All right. So here are my four greatest problems that we're facing as a nation right now. Our political class have no clue as to what the electorate wants. No clue. They win an election and they just do the things that they think they need to do. They just forget about the people. And that's why the people get, after a couple of days, the people get upset with them, and then the people start to think, how quickly can we get rid of these guys? So the biggest problem is the political class. They are just not focused on what the electorate is doing. Like during this campaign, nobody really knew what people were going to do. Only Elias knew. I knew that there was a wave coming. But what that wave was based on, nobody really knew. Because I saw some of the polls that said how close the election was. I saw some polls that were showing certain politicians were the most popular politicians in the country. And I'm saying, are you guys kidding with these polls? And I was just shocked. The second problem I see is really this civil service man. Our civil service is totally out of control. All the civil service is about is people driving around in really expensive cars and being on cell phones. That's all the Bahamian civil service is all about, wasting money, wasting resources. That's all that is about. Can we get the civil service, the cost of that whole bureaucracy, can we get that under control? That's going to be a huge challenge. 20-something thousand plus people that we've got to pay every month. And when you think about the productivity that comes from that place, from that crew of workers, man, I'm telling you, we've got to really think about that. The third thing I would say that's a huge problem for us is our country doesn't have a vision. You sit down, you go any place, you go Araki, you sit down anywhere, a vision of your country. What is your country all about? And people won't have a clue. They tell you stuff like it'll be about tourism and banking, but the country doesn't really have a vision. And the thing is, when you run in a small country like ours, a country with such a rich, important history like ours, the Bahamas is the place where globalization began. The Bahamas is the place where the world saw the first world people. I mean, think about that. I mean, pirates used to make, this used to be the home for pirates, and we used to be the home for pirates for a reason. This is just a perfect location. We are on America's third border. We in the middle of North and South America. Our vision should be driven by that idea. But we've got no vision. We've got no leader so far that really has ever articulated a vision for what the Bahamas is or really can be. Because we've got some really talented people. When you look at the talent we've got as a people, this Bahamians are incredibly talented, but we've never seen that talent displayed at the political level. And I'm really looking forward to that happening one day. And then the final thing I'd say is there is no place for brilliant Bahamians to go and do things, to go and do business. So we don't have a city in the Bahamas. We don't have no autonomous zones. And that's really sad. Because when you have Rhodes Scholars, you have NBA stars, you have Olympic medalists, when you have people like that in your country, there has to be a place where they can go and they don't have to ask their daddy to do things. You can imagine Shawnee Miller having to have to go to somebody to say, can I use the track? And that's what happens when your country doesn't have a city. When your country doesn't have a city, smart people, they have got to go to politicians and ask them, hey, can I be myself? Hey, can I be the guy who can own Amazon? Hey, can I be Elon Musk? Can I go into space? And you know, don't do great things. You know what they do? You know, when they run into a Jeff Bezos who says that, you know what, I want to organize the world's largest store. When an ordinary man runs into a guy like Jeff Bezos, he looks at him and he says, get out of my face. Why? Because he can't even wrap his mind around that. Or imagine the guys who would run Google. They're sitting down in front of you. You're a politician. And they're telling you, man, these young boys in school, you know, they're telling you, man, I am going to organize the world's information. You can imagine him sitting in front of a permanent secretary in the Bahamas or a minister. The guy's going to run you out of that office. And folks, that is what happens when your country doesn't have a city. Because cities are places where serious people go to do serious business. And so I want you to think about that. Really think about that. So give me what you think what advice would you give this government? And then tell me how you think our people, our voting population, tell me what you think they're thinking. What are they looking for? I get a sense that people, they are watching you all the time and they're keeping their mental notes. And there comes a point where they start giving you, they give you like a green tick and then they give you a red X. And when those red X's start to get too much, they just write you off and say, well, it's time to get rid of you. That's how I see us operating. So I'm waiting to hear from you. And in the meantime, folks, I've got a special treat for you, man. I've got a special treat for you. You know, I just love doing radio sometimes because, you know, you get to talk to people who get to talk to people who are doing things. So I got on the line. Folks, I've got on the line, you know, one time ago we used to call him the roughneck pastor. And you know, it's amazing how one day you're the roughneck pastor, the next day you're the world's pastor. You know, that's how life can be sometimes. One day you're brave, next day you're the prime minister. One day you're Dr. Minnis, next day you're the most honorable. God can promote whomever he wants to. And he can promote them anytime. So folks, I give you the world's pastor, Mr. Dave Burrows. Dave, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. My pleasure to be with you.
Hey, Dave, man. Thanks, man. I appreciate you being here. I was just thinking, you know, I used to call you the roughneck pastor, and then all of a sudden, you know, you became the world's pastor. It just goes to show, though, that God can promote people. God can do whatever he wants to do. One day we had Brave Davis. Next thing we have Prime Minister Davis. One day we had the leader of the opposition, Dr. Minnis. The next thing we have the most. I mean, give me a feel for how people have to get themselves ready for these supernatural promotions.
Well, I think the important thing to remember is that life is about seasons, and you have to recognize when seasons are changing. You know, when you are getting ready to go to the U.S. this time of the year, if you take the same clothes that you wear in the Bahamas to, let's say, Detroit, or if you go to Canada, right now you're going to be in for a shock because the seasons have already changed, which requires a different wardrobe. And for many of us, we need to just recognize when our seasons are changing and be appropriately attired in a, not necessarily in a physical sense, but I'm talking about in a mental and professional sense. So you got to recognize when your seasons are changing and when your seasons have changed, and prepare yourself appropriately and then walk into your season, because you know your season may have changed and you don't recognize it, and so you don't step into it, you know.
Yeah. And one of the things I also noticed too though, Pastor, is that our preparation, what you do on a daily basis when you step into these new roles, That is a serious indicator, because if you have not been preparing all your life for something, you could step into that role and then you start to underperform.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I remember several conversations that I had with Dr. Monroe, and I think I had two shows. And at that time, you know, I was doing a lot of work, not only locally, but internationally as well, as a youth pastor. And he made a statement that I never forgot. He said, you know, what you do is great, but refine your gift and more people will call on you. And I took that lesson and I refined my gift. So my ability to communicate on different levels was expanded. So initially, I was communicating to guys from the street. You know, I was using a lot of street language. And people could have presumed that, okay, you know, Dave is just a street guy. You know, since my background was from the streets, they could assume that. But I was much more than that. But in order for that to be communicated effectively to the world, I needed to recognize that I needed to refine what I do and make it palatable to the larger audiences that are waiting on me. And you know, and that's what happened. And so I've been able to, you know, travel the world, you know, speak in large venues, get called upon for consultation by national and international bodies, sit on global boards. So, you know, my season has changed and my role has expanded. And I was not afraid of the moment, and I wasn't apprehensive because I knew from the beginning all along who I was, but people didn't know.
Wow, that's amazing. So, you know, the way I saw it, and obviously my perspective on you would be a little bit different. How I saw you was you were doing what Miles was doing at the youth level, and then all of a sudden you started doing that started doing it for anybody.
You're right, because one of the things that people don't know is that several years before Dr. Monroe passed away, while I still held the title of youth pastor, I had already transitioned. So I had people running the youth ministry, and I had already begun to interact and to, you know, speak in global forums that were beyond youth.
Right.
So many times when I used to travel in the early days, I would travel for a Friday night and a Saturday morning meeting at a church or a venue, and I was speaking specifically to youth. But in the mid-2000s, I transitioned where I spoke to both young people and adults. And then the other thing that was always a part of me that wasn't very well known is that I was an accomplished businessman for many, many years, and I was involved in corporate training as something that I did outside of the youth ministry. So I stepped in for.
All right. Megabyte Computers, I think I remembered the actual transition moment. I don't know if you would agree with this or not, but you started to teach about family and winning. And it was amazing to me how those two themes was like transitioning you out of youth ministry into global ministry.
Yeah, you're right, and that's, you know, that's one of the things that did happen, and then people began to recognize it, you know. So you have to be ready for your season.
Right. Well, so Doc, what I want to do, man, is I want to engage people today about their transitions. And I wanna see what advice they would have for this new government. And so I want you to feed off us and let's just talk about this. Because at the end of the day, man, I think running a modern country, especially in the COVID era, is about how do you engage people.
Absolutely.
Right. So we're gonna take a couple of calls. The numbers to call in, folks, if you want in on this conversation, is 325-4316. 325-4259, the text line 4224796. And really what I want to know from you is, I want to know what advice you give to the new government. And I'd also be curious to, if you want to chime in, what's going on in the mindset of the voters in the Bahamas. All right, Kermit, so shall we take a call or two? Caller, go ahead. You're on the hit back with the Haja Black.
Lester.
Live in the flesh.
And how are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good, man.
Well, I know you're doing well, but, you know, you continue to talk about, how long have you had this idea?
Yeah, I think now for about 4 or 5 years.
Okay. So how do you see it going? Because you talk about it. I'm wondering who is joining you.
Right. Well, you know, I'm trying to get people on board with the idea. So what we did with New Providence City is we declared a city. So we declared an internet-based city called New Providence City. So we didn't ask anybody for permission. We just
declared. No, you don't need permission.
Correct. We just declared a city, and we are doing things on the internet, and we're not asking people for permission.
Okay. If that is the case, if that's your goal, then go ahead. But, you know, I don't know when it's going to happen, maybe 20 years, whatever it is. But what I'm saying is that every time you come on, you talk about the city.
Oh, man, the city. Look here, man, when was the last time you visited the United States?
Well, earlier this year.
All right. And you remember what state did you fly into?
Florida.
And what city in Florida did you fly into?
Well, what's the name of the place?
Miami?
To Miami.
Oh, you flew into Fort Lauderdale or Orlando?
Hey, my brother, you know my travels, eh?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
well, that's it, I mean. If that's what you're talking about. But I don't go to Miami. But you know my travels.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
So what else?
Right. So what advice would you give, if you had to give this new government a piece of advice, what would you tell them?
No. I listen to the government.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to the people closely. I don't know if you do that. I listen to that very closely. So how do I put it? I give advice
mm-hmm.
when I get to that position, and I have some advice for some people.
I got you.
But you know, they are in. They just came in. And you talked about the other government. They just came in. So I give them the opportunity, and if I see I should make some something, but I can do that. I mean, that's something that I do. And what I'm saying is that you have to wait, let them get their start,
mm-hmm.
and then go from there.
Right.
There's nobody who should say the government isn't doing anything. And if you say the government isn't doing anything, you must be in space.
Yeah.
And I leave that like that. Thank you very much.
Totally agree. Let's take another call. Caller, go ahead. You're on the hit back.
Good afternoon, Mr. Cox.
Hey.
I have some things I would like for the government to do.
Yeah, go ahead. We're listening.
I would want it to stop the bleeding in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And let somebody, or lease some land in Freeport, and let someone who has the capability to build a hospital or a new hospital. And the next thing I would want is a commission of an ombudsman or a committee of an ombudsman. Thank you.
Interesting. Let me ask you about that ombudsman thing. How you see that playing out? How would you see that operating?
Well, it was promised from Mr. Pinman's time. And I think it's about time now that somebody do it. Thank you.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see an office of the ombudsman. I'd love to see an office of the ombudsman. Very interesting. Doc, did you hear that? An office of the ombudsman.
Yeah.
That would be, you know, I thought by now we would have had a commission where we have the Public Service Commission. I would have thought by now we would have had a corruption commission that just deals with corruption at the political level and at the civil service level. I thought we should have evolved to that by now.
Well, I think one of the first things that we need is we need to examine the existing governing system and make sure that it's working before we even look at something else. And I think the ombudsman idea is a good idea. But in many ways, you know, one of the things that I discovered over the last year or two is that we have a democracy that is not functioning properly. And if it functioned better, we would have better governance. And I think that's one of the more achievable things in the short term.
Right. Give me a feel for what you mean by a democracy that's not functioning properly, because many would argue, and I have a tendency to agree with you. I think we need to update a lot of things. I think we needed to update our democracy, you know, many years ago. But I mean, what's your take? What do you mean by that?
Okay, for example, we have a two-party system, and in the two-party system, there are constitutional edicts about how the operation should happen. So, for example, the opposition party governs the Public Accounts Committee.
Right.
And so they are supposed to have access to the information to question the government when something is going wrong as far as the accounts are concerned. But what's happened is that in several areas, the political machinery has been able, and I'm not talking about any particular party because this happens on both sides,
right,
has been able to skirt around some of these constitutionally mandated functions. So, for example, in a parliamentary majority, and you can manipulate the system where you can avoid accounting or avoid answering. And you know, that happens in our system, and it's been happening in our system. I think one thing that's very important that a lot of Bahamians don't realize is activism is actually important. And we need activists to point out things like this in the system and bring it to the public's attention, because what's happened in the Bahamas is that the electorate has become less tolerant and more demanding of good governance. But what happens sometimes is the electorate is ignorant of how the current government is supposed to function. And so they're not demanding that governments function the way that they are supposed to. And when I say governments, I don't mean one party, because we have a two-party system. The
right.
government and the opposition are both the government. One is the governing party and one is the opposition. But the two together form a government. So I think, you know, we need to look at ensuring that the existing functions of our democracy are operating properly, because, you know, we talk about changing it, and I believe we should change it. But what happens until it changes? What can we do until it changes?
That's
and
right.
One of the things that we can do is we can demand things are supposed to function happen. And when we see it not happening, that's where activists become important. You know, in the last 5 years or so, we've seen of activist groups, you know, have marches, have press conferences, press releases, alerting the Bahamian public to certain issues.
Right.
And in many ways, because what happens is we live in an information age. When you reveal information and everybody has access to it, then the numbers put pressure on the government to change. And we have seen that happen, and I think we have to appreciate the role of activists.
Right.
Activists are very important, because when something is not functioning properly and you point it out and you keep pointing it out, the more numbers you have, the more the government is forced to listen to you. So, you know, we have to realize that there's a role that we can play even before we change aspects of the government.
Wow. So stepping into... So making sure your voice is heard is a critical part of being a part of a democracy. Because I think most of us, we just exercise our franchise to vote every 5 years or whenever an election is called. We don't feel the need to actually to show up at certain events.
And that's because there's a fundamental misunderstanding of politics. You know, people believe that politics consists of MPs and, you know, persons who run for office. But one of the things that, you know, I explained to a group that I was talking to, a lecture that I was giving recently, is that the word politics comes from the word politikos, which means for, of, or relating to citizens.
Wow. So
if you are a citizen, it means...
For, of, and relating to citizens.
Right. That's one of the meanings. Another meaning of politics, and I can send you the document with all of this in it. Another meaning of politics is the responsibility of managing resources and policies that affect the behavior of others. So when you look at what politics means, it means that we are all supposed to be involved in politics, but we have segmented politics to get it to mean that there's this group of people every 5 years who we elect to office, and that is politics. So politics is being involved in affairs that relate to your life. I have to pay taxes. You know, I am the victim of various policies. So it's incumbent upon me to get myself in a position to get involved in either the decision-making process or the implementation process, or agitating for those who are in the governing authority to make sure that they are accountable to the laws on the books and they are accountable to what they said.
Wow, interesting. When we were at the coffee place today, it's interesting that how you're putting this now is it's slightly different, and I think it's more powerful because, you know, initially we were talking about politics as opposed to what you're talking about now, you know, because a lot of us, we don't necessarily want to get into frontline politics. But when you put politics the way you're putting it now, all of us need to find a way to influence and be involved.
Yeah, definitely. When you think about it, if you have a community of faith, that is, those are organizations that affect policy. It affects the behavior of people. And so if you are not running for office, for a national office, you can run for a local office. You can run for a board. You can get involved in many, many levels. And in some cases, you can have more influence on policy than someone who is running for national office. You know, there are some very, very strategic community associations, even civic organizations that have influence. And so we have to look at it from the perspective that we have to find the avenue where we can make an impact. And whatever that is, you know, and we shouldn't sit on the sidelines. You know, one of the things that I have been doing over the years, and a lot of people, you know, are not aware of what I do, but from the time that I took over my current role, I write letters to all of the prime ministers. I write letters to MPs. I write letters to people. And I share my opinion. I make recommendations and suggestions. And what I have found is that in many instances, sometimes I will write a letter or make a recommendation, and then I will hear a speech, you know,
like
from a member of the ruling party or even the opposition, and then I will hear what I wrote.
What is it? So, Doc, one of the things I notice when I don't do what you time to time, I'd write a prime minister, I'd write a deputy prime minister, I'd write a minister of finance. So I would write the people in government or in places of power and give them ideas. What I notice a lot of times is the guy would grab one of the ideas. Like an idea that I have for the Bahamas that I think is probably revolutionary is to have a U.S. dollar ledger, right? And I wrote one of our leaders about it. And they tried to implement it, but they just messed up the idea because, number one, they didn't really understand it fully. And I'm always disappointed sometimes when you give someone an idea and they try to run with that idea without the person who gave them the idea or without coming back to you and say, hey, can you explain this a bit more? Do you think we need an ideas discipline where we telling people, look, man, if somebody gives you an idea, do not try to run with people's idea. Make sure, number one, you acknowledge that the idea. And if you're going to vary the idea, you should just like acknowledge it and let the person know, you know, look, yeah, I like this idea. I want to vary it. What do you think about it? How should we deal with people like us who, from time to time, we are giving leaders ideas?
Well, I think that's impossible to police, you know, and you always run the risk when you share something that is of value. You run the risk of somebody trying to take credit for it.
Right. I'm not so much worried about someone taking credit for an idea because, you know, ideas are free. But I'm just always concerned about people like bastardizing your idea, just messing it up. Like you know, can you imagine if God gave you the mandate to take the people of Israel somewhere, you arrive at the Red Sea and you don't have no rod. And I find that happens a lot of times when people just move ideas in the wrong way.
Yeah, that's very difficult to police, you know, that when you have an idea, you place it strategically, and if somebody is bastardizing your idea, you know, reach them and talk to them about it. But
write them again.
Very difficult, you know.
That's not about write them again. Folks, you're listening to Hit Back with Nahaja Black. This is Lester Alcock sitting in for Nahaja. I've got the world's pastor on the line. He used to be the roughneck pastor. Now he's we just call him the world's pastor. He moves around talking to people about not just religion, but winning, family, living a better life. Back in a moment.
This hurricane season, be ready. Protect your home with an affordable and comprehensive home insurance policy from Shield Insurance. You can't control what nature blows your way, but with Shield Insurance, you can rest easy as you ride out the storm. Protect your largest and most valuable investment. Don't take a chance. Put your home in our hands.
Shield Insurance agents and brokers in Nassau. Call 356-7202 or Freeport 352-5945.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
One of the things I've been trying to understand is what does it take to be an effective leader in today's global economy? And what we see is to be an effective leader in today's economy, you must be not simply a value creator, you must be a game changer. What I mean by that is you must not only address performance issues, gaps between where you are and where you should be, but you also must be prepared to address opportunity gaps, gaps between where you are and where you could be. So people want you and need you to use your imagination and to create an environment in which other people can use their talents and their passions too, to come up with new ideas about how to do business. So leadership is less about you setting the direction and trying to get followers to simply execute your vision, but rather it's more about how do you shape a context in which other people can share their passions and their talents with the organization, and you can harness those talents and come up with what we refer to as a collective genius. Because we know that everybody has a slice of genius, and the most exceptional leaders know how to unleash the slice of genius in everyone who works in the organization and use those slices for the collective good of the organization. So again, the other thing we see about leaders who can be game changers is they don't worry so much about, I'm the one who has to set direction. What they worry more about, if you look at their mindset, is how do I help people understand who we are, what we're doing, what our purpose is? And when they understand that and they care about that, they'll be willing to share their talents with the organization so that we can build an organization that's very innovative and actually meets the needs of all of our stakeholders.
Beulah Gal, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns? Where they hiding the drugs? Who shoot who? Who part of which gang? Or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles?
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody go on come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all know before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands, or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
Welcome back to the Hit Back with Nahaja Black. This is Lester R. Cox sitting in for the great Nahaja Black. I've got Dr. Dave Burrows on the line. He's the world's pastor. He talks about family and winning. What a message, Doc. Family and winning. Can you get any better than that? Family and winning.
Yes, sir.
That is...
One of my focus, and you know, I've written 17 books.
Doc, you've written 17 books already now?
Yeah, 17 books. And one of the books that I've written is called The Laws of Good Success. And so, you know, I'm not focused just on, I guess, what people would term religious matters, even though there's a correlation. But we all want to be successful, and we all want to know how to achieve success. But a lot of people don't understand what principles contribute And that is a part of my focus. I'm focused on family. I'm focused on winning. I'm focused on business. I'm focused on leadership and definitely success. And I think, you know, we have to be well-rounded people and we have to focus on the principles and policies that would bring us about success both individually and as a country.
Because today I opened the show talking about people who have ideas for the government. And, Doc, I think the two biggest ideas, I think, for us, I don't know if you were listening, I don't know if you were listening just now to that clip by Linda Hill, where she talked about how important it is for leaders to set a context about telling people this is about who we are and what we're doing. I think the two greatest things that we can do as a country is to tell people this is the vision, this is the Bahamas vision. And then after you would have set that vision for the country, you then create a city where people can go and do things without having to ask their daddy. You know, you just go and make things happen. And this is a lot of times why people, I would assume why people, my guy would come, he started a church. He wants to share his vision with whomever, who's ready for it. But there's no place in the Bahamas where we can just go and display our collective genius without having regard to people.
Well, I think there's a very important point that you made, and that point is the point of having a vision. You know, in order for it to be successful, one of the keys to success is vision. You know, when we look at the Bible says,
without
a vision, people perish.
Right.
And my people perish for a lack of knowledge. So there's two critical elements that we need for success as individuals, and we need success for success as a nation.
So that would be vision and
knowledge.
Vision and knowledge.
Information is critical. You know, you can't really succeed without knowledge. You have to have knowledge of your subject area, and I think for a country like the Bahamas, we need a vision that's not just a party vision. Now, it's probably, it's going to have to come from someone.
Right.
And that's what makes great leaders. Great leaders are people who are able to explain and expound on a vision that the whole country, you know, takes advantage of. Let me give you an example of a vision. When you look at Martin Luther King, you know, he said, and when he made the statement, "I have a dream," then he explained what he was dreaming about.
Right.
And that
mobilized
the entire black population in the United States, not only the United States, but globally. So vision is very important. And the question is, what is the vision for the Bahamas and who has enunciated the vision for the Bahamas? And that's something that we have to come to. We have to ask ourselves, what is the vision for the future of the Bahamas? And when we get to that, then we have to get into the steps. There are five steps that, you know, I share in one of my sessions that I do. I share on the five keys to success in whatever you're doing in life.
Right.
The first key is recognize.
Recognize.
Because whatever you don't recognize, you won't change or you won't take advantage of.
Before you go to the second key, give me a favor. I don't know if you know this guy named Mike Murdoch. So Mike Murdoch did this book one time ago. He called it The Law of Recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a feel for what you mean by recognize.
Okay, let me give you an example. Let's say you have a talent, a gift,
right,
or you have an inheritance. But you are going about life not recognizing what's close to you,
mm-hmm,
and what's already legally yours. So one example of that is the story of the prodigal son. The prodigal son didn't recognize who his father was.
Wow.
He didn't recognize what was already legally his.
Right.
And so it was not his destiny. And he was unable to recover until he finally recognized. The Bible says that he came to his senses, and he said to himself, "I do not belong with swine."
Wow.
There are people in the world who are living with swine because they don't recognize who they really are. Once he made that recognition, then he said, I'm going to go back to my father, because he recognized what was in his father's house.
Right.
He recognized what he had. And he said, boy, I recognize what I had. I've lost everything. But at least I can go back to my father, and perhaps he'll give me a lesser position. But I finally recognized the truth. The truth wasn't that he needed his inheritance right away. The truth was that his inheritance was already his, and at the appropriate time, it would have been manifest. But in the meantime, he was in a secure position. He was in the best position that he can be in, but he didn't recognize it. So that's an example of recognition.
Well, Doc, let's stay on this for a moment. Because so when the guy came back to his father, the father also blessed him with three gifts as well. The father gave him a ring, which is a symbol of his authority, gave him a robe, and he also gave him a slipper.
Yeah, what the father was saying to him is, boy, I was trying to tell you this all along.
Wow.
You know, and he was telling him, look, so the son was saying, well, you know, I'm not worthy. And the father said, this ain't about worthy. This is about you recognizing who your daddy is and who you are. And so his daddy was saying to him, which represents God, his daddy was saying, look, you know, I haven't changed, but you changed. So you need to recognize where the truth is and come back to it. And then the father also said to him, you know, the father recognized that it's possible in the world that we live in for people to not recognize their own destiny. And that's what a lot of people in the world are suffering from today right now. They don't understand what's already given to them. They don't understand what their destiny is. There are people right now who maybe they're supposed to be the prime minister of the Bahamas, but they're in a crack house.
Jeez.
Or they're robbing banks.
Wow.
You know, so until you recognize who you are, you will spend your life on a detour.
And Doc, so that also means, so that gentleman called in the show earlier, and he talked about three things. He said he wanted to see the bleeding stop. He wanted a new hospital, and then he wanted to see the office of the ombudsman. And I'm thinking, if you recognize who you are, there is no way you could be broke.
You know, the thing about it is that, you know, everybody has gifts and talents and abilities. We are all born with something. But many of us don't recognize it. You know, I told a story one time about a guy who, you know, he said, look, you know, I don't have any skills. I don't have any talents. I have nothing to offer. And he was driving a taxi.
Right.
But he had this ability to make people laugh. And so when people would get in his taxi, he would tell jokes. And this is a true story. And one day he was dropping a passenger from Atlantis to the airport. And when the passenger came in the car, he was angry and miserable. And then he started, you know, telling jokes to the guy. About halfway to the airport, the guy was falling down in the back seat laughing.
Wow.
And so when they got to the airport, the guy, how much do I owe you? And he said, oh, you owe me $25. The guy reached in his wallet and picked out 10 $100 bills and gave him $1,000. Now, what did he give him $1,000 for? He didn't give him $1,000 for a ride. He gave him $1,000 because there was a gift in this man that this man didn't recognize the value of. And he told him, he showed him, he said, boy, this is valuable. And here's $1,000 to prove it, you know? And so I think, you know, all of us, we have to discover our gifts and we have to recognize what's already inside of us. And we have to maximize it, you know? And once we do that, the value will come back to us.
Amazing. The recognition. Folks, you're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black. I've got the great Dr. Dale Barros on the line, the world's greatest pastor. We're going to take a break for news. And when we come back, Doc, I want you to stay on this recognition thing for a little while longer, man, because I'm starting to feel that. Back in a moment.
All right. Thank you.
J.S. Johnson Insurance agents are the best. Reliable service, they've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson Insurance has the best. Always, you're always covering me. J.S. Johnson Insurance, peace of mind.
When I had got prostate cancer, my family didn't know if I was going to live at Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Within days, I got an appointment. They presented me with treatment options, and they set up a robotic prostatectomy. When my scans came back, there are no signs of cancer. They don't see you as a number. They see you as a part of family. I'm going on with my life. It's a real gift.
Call us at Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
Attention all students in grade 4 through 12. Do you think you know about money? Well, the chance to prove it and win cash in the 2021 Get Money Smart Bahamas Video Essay Competition. Can you tell us why you think the Bahamian economy is an ideal model for digital financial services? If you can, just produce a short video submission before October 22nd and show us you are money smart. Cash prizes will be given in various age categories, but you must get your parents' permission to enter. For more information, visit www.getmoneysmartbahamas.com or see our post on social media.
Baja, sugar, sugar, let's get sugary, softer, smoother, and amazing skin. Oh, Baja sugar, sugar, we're the sugar ladies, giving you skin soft as a baby's. Goodbye hair, we'll take good care of you.
Come visit us at Baja Retreat Spa on East Bay Street. Contact us at 323-6711 or visit us online and www.baharetree.com.
You invest in your children, your home, and your community. But are you investing in your financial future? At CFAO, we specialize in investment management, retirement planning, mutual funds, and private wealth management. Our team of experts help you plan for tomorrow. Because tomorrow begins today. Call us at 502-7010 to see what our financial advisors can do for you. CFAO. Growing wealth for future generations.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
It's the hit back, hey, with Nahasha Black.
Hey.
It's the hit back,
hey,
with Nahasha Black.
Hey.
It's the hit back,
hey,
with Nahasha Black.
Hey.
It's the hit back.
Welcome back to the Hit Back with Nahasha Black. This is Lester Arcock sitting in for the great Nahasha Black. Nahasha, enjoy yourself, man. Hey, I am talking to the world's pastor man, Dr. Dave Burrows. Doc, now, you know Mike Murdoch, obviously.
Yes, I do.
Let me read you something about what he said about the law of recognition. Two things. This is what he said. He says, the law of the seed reveals whatever you have in your hands will create anything you want in your future. The law of recognition teaches everything you need in your life is already in your life, merely aware of it. Wow.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, when we look at the Bahamas, you know, sometimes I just peruse what people are saying on the internet and talk shows, and I hear things like this. People are saying, we are finished. We are not going anywhere. You know, the Bahamas is going to basically a doomsday scenario. And whereas we have enormous challenges, the truth is we are not going anywhere and we're not finished. And there are solutions that are right within us. So everything for Earth is already in Earth. Every solution to every problem in the Earth is already here. We don't recognize it yet. Let me give you an example. We could have flown a plane in the year 2000 BC.
Right.
Why didn't we fly a plane? Because nobody knew. Nobody had the knowledge. Nobody was able to recognize that this was possible. So we have to remember that there are tremendous unknowns within the Bahamian population. The solutions to our problems are right here. And we have to make a commitment to finding those solutions and not get caught up in saying how dire the situation is. Because, you know, when you think about it, as difficult and as challenging as the pandemic has been, we didn't have people die outside of the disease. We really didn't have a lot of people die because they didn't have food to eat, because they had a challenge existing. So people were existing, people were still in their homes, people were still, even though you had job losses, you know, people were still in their jobs. And without any tourists for a year, we figured out how to survive. Now, it meant borrowing money that put us in a hole, but we figured out a way how to get through it. We now have to figure out what's next. We have to figure out how not only to get through it, but how to rebound. And I believe the answers to that question are among us. Think about this population of 350,000 people. There are countries in the Olympics with 200 million people, and they didn't win one gold medal, and we won two.
Can you imagine? And we vex if people don't come back with medals.
Yeah. And that tells us that, you know, the Bahamas can carry his weight. Now, does that mean we are only capable athletically? Well, that's not true, because if you look around the world, and I happen to, in a number of places that I've traveled, meet Bahamians in top positions who are well-respected, and they are providing solutions for other countries. You know, so the solution is here among our people.
Interesting. So, Doc, that means that, so we just ain't recognized that we have a gold medal winning politician yet. Because, I mean, I haven't really, we haven't shown at the political level that we're ready for the world.
You're right. I mean, what we have seen to date is, you know, we haven't said, you know, the gold medal top performer in politics.
Right.
But that doesn't mean they're not here.
True. So we got to recognize them. All right. So Doc, you've got four more to give us now. Now before you start with the four, I wanna introduce another guest that we have in studio. This man talks about stuff like fixing the future. Can you imagine somebody bold enough to talk about fixing the future?
Indeed.
I mean, fixing the future. I see him as the Henry Kissinger of the Caribbean, one of this region's brightest minds. And sometimes, you know, we just have to activate that law you talk about, man, the law of recognition. Doc, that recognition thing, people need to understand that. Everything you need is already inside you. Everybody you need is already near you. You just have to recognize that sometimes you don't recognize the answer is right next to you and Joseph.
Absolutely.
Wow. All right, Cameron, you've got my drum roll? Look, man, whenever I come into the studio, you need to have a drum roll, because when I introduce my guests, I have to let people know that, you know, this is serious business. Anyway, I give him a drum roll myself. Folks, we've got the Bahamian and the Caribbean version of Henry Kissinger, one of the brightest minds in the region, Dr. Gilbert Morris. Doc, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Hello, Pastor Dave. How are you doing?
Wonderful. Good to be with you.
I haven't seen you in a while, and Pastor Dave is one of those people that we have to recognize, and he has a son that we should recognize.
Oh, yeah, Irie. Yeah.
Outstanding. Brilliant young Bahamian doing amazing things at the very top of the world of global finance.
I'm telling you, Doc also has a very brilliant young daughter as well. Yeah. Done a fantastic job with your children, man. Congrats.
Marvelous.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Marvelous.
I saw Doc at coffee this morning, you know, at this place called Lewis and Steen.
Yes.
And I told him that, you know, you were going to be in the studio.
Yes.
And he should come hang out with us.
Yes. That would have been great. I loved it. He's written a couple of really insightful books and done, of course, doing yeoman's work in God's calling on his life. And so, Doc, I always appreciate you.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing sometimes, though, Dr. Morris, that when you get promoted to a position, what that position wants to know is what have you been preparing for all your life?
Right.
And a lot of times I see people get in important roles, and their lack of preparation is just, it exposes them.
Well, I think that, and perhaps Pastor Dave would speak to this, but sometimes people have an ambition for the position
mm-hmm.
rather than the ambition to fulfill a calling. And if you, when you want to fulfill a calling, the position is right, authority, capacity, these sorts of things. But when you have one ambition, which is just to be there,
right,
and that's a problem. And one of the things I was asked by Fred Mitchell in 2003 to give a lecture on foreign policy, and one of the problems I was saying is that many of our foreign policy people. They're really foreign relations people, because foreign policy means you have a strategy, you know, you have a roadmap.
You have a vision, right?
Yeah, you have a vision. But foreign relations means you just go somewhere when other people call you. You stand in line, you get your per diem, you go hit Walmart, and then you come home, take a couple of pictures and that sort of thing. And I remember this when President Obama went to Jamaica. Not a single Caribbean leader had a proposal or a concept or something to hand. The only person who handed him a proposal was Hugo Chavez.
Jeez. Right. I mean, and sometimes it just doesn't occur to you. And Doc, I've seen you do this. I've seen you do this over and over, because, I mean, you're one of my boys, and I mean, you share stuff with me that right. you do. You know, you could send a memo to a leader. You could send a memo to Barack Obama. Whether he reads it or not, that's on him.
But the point is,
you would have documented, and Dr. Burrows talked about it just now. Dr. Burrows, a lot of people don't know what he does, but he would write these people and send them ideas.
He and I are at one with that. And even when I was in university, when I read books and I had issues, I would hunt down the writer. And in those days, there was no email, right? And get a phone number, and he'd be somewhere in Ohio or in Coventry or something. Nobody remembers him. And when you call and say, I read your book, you got to run him off the phone. He's there with you. But invariably, they tell you, you know, you need to meet this person, that person, the next person. I have a retired president or prime minister who loved this book, and he thinks this, and I have a contact for him. Why don't I introduce you, and so on. And you end up building a genuine network, not simply going to cocktail parties to network, but actually meeting and connecting with people over ideas that when they are clustered together become concepts, and when they are fully distilled become principles, and then when they are set for implementation with a roadmap become policy. And that's what we have to be doing.
Yeah, people, and I think sometimes we just forget that the most successful people are really the most generous. You know, you would run into people who weighed 100 million, 200 million, 300 million, a billion, and you would send them an email asking them a question.
Yeah.
And before you know it, they're responding to you. They're inviting you somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that every decade of my life, I've probably written to at least 100 of the world's national leaders. And I'd say that I get a 30% response.
Wow.
So recently, I've gotten a higher response when Mr. Biden won, and I decided to write a comprehensive letter. You saw it. COVID management,
right.
And to say that testing is more important, after having read almost and spoken to the best minds on the subject, including Carl Friston, the world's most outstanding statistician and neuroscientist at the University of London, where I serve on the convocation. And I wrote 100 leaders, and I got about 65% response. Across the world.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And people who want to engage. And so this coming Sunday, I've got three cabinets that I'm talking to about this. And it's, I'm sure Pastor Davis had similar experiences where you lay things out and talk to people. But listen, the ideas begin everything.
Right.
Some people say values, because you to have the ideas come into your head, but they register with you when they connect with your values. And then when you bundle ideas together, they are concepts. So everything you own, your mobile phone, the wet wipes, the sanitation, these are all concepts. These are ideas that were once separated from each other. It's a functional proposition.
Right. Wow. Now, you see, that's interesting. So obviously, you are more of a conceptual guy. So Dr. Burrows, when you write, what do you normally write on? I don't imagine you'd be writing on COVID, would you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, COVID was one of the things that I wrote about extensively. Because, you know, in the midst of COVID, I had a lot of questions. And I saw some things that I felt could be done differently. And I had two options. You know, I could go in on the radio and I could blast the government and I can say, you know, these people don't know what they're doing. Or I can engage at the highest level and say, here are my recommendations. And I think what you tend to find is that if you criticize somebody without providing a solution, all you do is make an enemy.
Yeah. They. If you're dealing with Bahamian politicians, certainly everybody, you got to start off. You got to start off with a compliment.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what I did was I gave a list. I gave like a 12-point list of practical things that I think that could be done. And you know, I don't know if some of the things that were implemented were a direct result of what I recommended. My responsibility, you know, we are all limited. We are limited to our area of access. So if the only access I have is to write a letter, that's all that I can do. If I have expanded access, then I do more.
Right.
You know, I don't have a seat at the table. So if you don't have a seat at the table, you become a victim of the...
I like that.
If you can get a seat at the table, if you can get a word in, a letter in, if you can get access to somebody who is at the table, then it brings you closer to influencing policy, you know? So that's basically, you know, what I did. You know, I wrote about COVID, and I said, here's what I think could be done differently. And what's interesting is I remember I was on a radio show with Zhivago Lang, and I had sent him my recommendations before I sent it to, you know, to the government. And afterwards, I was on the show with him, and he said, Dave, he said, boy, it looks like, you know, they read your paper. Now, I don't know if there was a connection, but I did my part.
Right.
And I prefer, instead of just criticizing, I prefer to take the constructive action that can bring about a tangible result. I mean, criticism is, there's nothing wrong with criticism. But a lot of times what we have is we have sideline critics. We have people who are on the sidelines, and they tell the people who are on the front lines what they should be doing, but they never engage. They never provide solutions.
Right.
And so all they do is perform a sideline critic. It's like a guy who's in the stands at a football game. You know, he's shouting, people around him can hear what he's saying, but the people who the message needs to be directed to can't hear him, you know?
I like this, Dr. Morris. This is almost like an approach where people who are not at the table, you can't really complain. You've got to produce your paper and you've got to get your ideas out there. Because one of the things that I noticed about COVID, And I think this is just a huge mistake that I see all governments making, but as though this is a health problem, and COVID is really more than a health problem. COVID is bigger than just your health area.
Absolutely, this is one of the things which at the beginning I was at pains, because when I would speak to people, they would say, "Well, you're an economist. Why?"
And why are you talking about COVID?
Yeah, and my point is, well, I'm actually a methodologist and who is an expert in econometrics, and COVID is like inflation. Sorry, a virus is like inflation. We're used to tracking inflation and using, you know, statistical probabilistic models to track inflation, and so I have a way of vectoring the problem.
Right.
So that's one. Number two, it's a social problem. The pandemics are problems of social logistics. And so when you, any subject that you're in, people keep saying, oh, so-and-so is a medical doctor, so he's best, or she's best for COVID. Not true.
Correct.
They have their role to play in it, but the real solutions would come from people like geographers or obviously epidemiologists, but what do they study? Econometrics, population geography. They use the statistics and mathematics. They divide between various binaries that are defined by either arithmetic or exponential math. And so you have to understand that. And I've been saying all along that I've run a sort of ranking, an index of the 7 best performing countries.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then the 15 worst performing countries. And the reason for this is to take, because the countries are distributed, some in Asia, many in Asia, but you have Cayman, you have Bhutan, you have Dubai, so cultures, you have Senegal, so cultures are very, very different. And one was able to analyze Rwanda. One was able to analyze what they did well.
Right. And you won't think these won't be countries that's top performers economically. And we would make excuses in places like the Bahamas that be so small. And these are just excuses because every country in the world have the exact same moment.
The greatest divergence, if you have a great divergence in performance, then the difference is leadership.
Correct.
Not resources.
Right. So we can't go. So people have to know you could never rise higher than your leadership.
Right. No, and that's important. And I agree with Pastor Dave's point about being proactive. As you know, I just came from Washington, D.C., from a set of meetings. But these meetings were way above national governments. These were national security experts from 31 countries. Thinking about the exponential risk and existential risk to the world from nuclear proliferation, disease, rogue genetic engineering, rogue artificial intelligence, all these sorts of things. And, there was, I won't call this general's name, but he was there. Most people know him from Afghanistan. American general, and his point was to people talking, and people were saying juxtaposing China and the United States, and his point was China is not the problem. I mean, China is. We know what they are going to do. They're very, very disciplined about. They're not going to engage in a Cold War. They are spending money on economic dominance
right.
and that sort
and
of thing.
They stay out of people's business.
Absolutely. So, the biggest military threat to us. Is a private military threat. And so people were like, it is that Google has amassed the largest military capability using buying up robotics companies and artificial intelligence than any entity in human history.
Google. Interesting.
And so he's not saying that Google is a threat to them. He's saying if you run the numbers on who has capacity, this is what you have to know. That's one. Number two, if you think about things like exponential tech and how Facebook, Google, Amazon, these companies know you better than you know your wife because your wife knows you because they profile you and
right.
so on. That data is going somewhere, and where it's going is not to governments. So the platform data, to give you an example, if you think about Eric Schmidt, the former chairman of Google, or you think of Elon Musk, do you really believe that they regard either Trump or Biden as an equal?
No.
The answer is no.
No.
So there exists corporate executives in the world today who have a scale of influence, capacity, wealth, and power that exceeds the regulation capacity of. So if you're...
Hold on thought right there, because these advanced concepts, and congratulations on your appointment to this new board.
Helena Foundation.
Yeah, congratulations, man. Don't know that there's some people thinking about some advanced things.
Right.
And some of us, we're just struggling trying to pay the bills.
Right.
But there are some people that's thinking.
Yeah. Well, if you live in an island, right, an island is a fiction in many respects because... If it's an island with no traditional resources, particularly extractive resources, which are really the global economy is based on extractive resources and the export of surplus in order to earn foreign currency, we've come up with an accounting system that allows us to have some measure of prosperity and an economy. But we should have had people studying that, examining it, looking at it constantly. And I've written to every government about it one way or the other, or spoken to national leaders about it. And it's as if we're sleepwalking, and we don't seem to understand that as an island, we should be operating within windows. No opportunity lasts forever. Windows are a gradient. They if you think of an inverted U curve, it's weak at one end, strong in the middle, and weak at the other end.
Right.
So there's an arc to the opportunity. And then the gradient flows of that arc. Gradient flows upward, gradient flows downward with momentum, right? So velocity up, momentum down. And we should be thinking of how to strategically position our country. We really shouldn't be governing for today, or worse, governing from yesterday. We should be governing into the future, because small islands cannot dictate their future. And therefore, the rationale, people say, well, it's all in the hands of God. Yeah, but God gave you the intelligence
to God gave you a brain.
Look at where you are and to project outwards. You know, if you have children, right, there are certain things you're going to do to ensure that when, you know, if they're 5, when they're 18, certain things are provided for them.
Right.
So we should be thinking along those lines, and particularly for islands with low resource content, we should be thinking much, much further ahead. There is already the capacity in private companies, at least the 6 largest infotech companies in the world, to overcome countries like ours. If we move to vaccine visas around the world, and I believe it's going to move even further than that in the lectures which I've given on this subject, to health as identity. So once your people were your identity, you would go somewhere and they would say, he's of those people, right? So
right.
The Native Americans have it, he's an Apache, he's, you know, and so on.
Yeah, I'm an ancestor. I'm on this site called Ancestry.com.
Yes, absolutely.
And they could tell you my DNA. And
absolutely. Where identity
and
was...
And who was connected to me.
That was your people. And then at the turn of the 20th century, photography came in. And so your likeness was your identity. And then in 1924, the FBI was invaded, 1924, 1934, I can't remember, somewhere between there. Then biometrics came in with fingerprints.
Right.
And so a combination of biometrics and likeness became your identity. And then in the modern era, a larger iris scanning and all this kind of thing, facial recognition and so on. Now, all that's going to be junked, in my view, and people are going to have your actual health records, right? And and it's likely that it won't be governments. And if you think about Amazon right now, Amazon could hire every unemployed Bahamian right now.
And pay them well.
Pay them through PayPal. No national insurance. They could live from the Bahamas, but not in the Bahamas. And Amazon is not the only one. There are at least 100 tech companies that can do such a thing. And so the old model, governments got their legitimacy from the plebiscite of the people, right? The vote of the people.
Right.
And government maintained their position by having a monopoly on violence. So the monopoly on violence is not necessarily hot violence. It's also things like penalties, court systems, you know, these kinds
right,
of
right.
things.
Codification of law.
Absolutely. But the problem today is the new technologies make it impossible for governments to enforce, right? Makes it impossible. So if you look at Facebook right now, testifying before the U.S. Senate right this minute, senators are terrified because Facebook is the only means for them to get contact with their constituency, and they don't want to irritate, they want to control them,
right,
as is their duty. So an American general wrote this thing where he said that it's OODA loops, it's no longer violence. Who has the fastest OODA loops? Who has the fastest...
And OODA loops is what? What is
is the ability to detect, all right, organize some of the things that Pastor Dave was talking about, to observe, organize, operationalize or optimize, right, and then implement policy. So this is a this comes from military training where military generals said long-term planning is useless now. It's speed to impact that matters. So long-term planning is not the key because you have, I'm going deep in the weeds now, you have what is called a power law distribution. Mm-hmm. If I plan long-term and all my enemies plan short-term, even though my long-term plan is better, I'll be dead, so I won't get to implement my long-term plan. So everybody then makes short-term plans. So companies do the same thing. We want long-term planning and to invest in plant and materials, but if we do that, we use up our capital. Our competition invests for the short term and simply acquire companies to do what we're investing for them to do. And so their OODA loop is shorter. The loop of their impact is much shorter and tighter, and then they get to dominate the market.
Right. So Doc, in environments like ours where everything is centralized,
you can't get the OODA loops.
Correct. So obviously we've got to try now to understand the importance of autonomous thinking in different areas.
Absolutely. So you can have multiple loops working, so you get much more greater productivity, because as Doc says, you get greater recognition. The more decentralized you are, the more you can recognize unused
different
or unrequited
areas, excellent
value. Absolutely.
So that's one of the things that thought leaders like us have to start teaching people. I have a ghetto idea for climate change, and I'm really shocked. When I go to China, it's amazing how advanced they are in experimentation in different parts of the economy.
Right.
I am amazed at data that in 10, 15 years, 80% of our country could be underwater.
Yes.
But we have no plans for raising our country. I just had a ghetto plan just at the top of my head. I said, look here, Andres is a huge island. We could take half of Andres for Phil to build up the next hour. I mean, that sounds like a ghetto idea, but the point is somebody got to start thinking about the future.
Well, you and I will have to discuss your ghetto idea. But you know, I've said Andros is 48% of the total landmass of the Bahamas. But Andros is useful for another reason. Andros yields water. And water is
and
a crisis around the world. So my view is not one spoon of sand should be moved from Andros ever, because Andros itself is an archipelago. It's not an island.
Right.
It's an archipelago.
Yeah, loads
and,
of...
Absolutely. And so...
And it can produce its own power because it's an archipelago. You have a lot of current...
Absolutely.
And it's the energy is natural.
Absolutely. So studies should be done. And I think that my brother, Felix Stubbs, distinguished Felix Stubbs in the National Development Plan, and I can't remember the lady at the professor.
Virgin Rule.
Yes, she. Every time I mention this, I want to make sure I identify her, because her work was excellent according to my own judgment. But Andros, we should have in Andros, we have the greatest physical library for national development of any country, I think, in the Caribbean. And we ought to have by now our children and our young people, the same way the Swiss children can tell you about why the Alps make the Swiss a unique place that you can't penetrate, our children should be talking about Andros as a logical proposition that gives them a high level of understanding of ecology, environmental science, physics, chemistry, mathematics, trigonometry, and then when you come to population and the distribution of population vis-a-vis resources and so on, the arithmetic and exponential elements that allow for Andros to be a resource, our resource capacity, to fulfill our resource capacities. We haven't done that. We just leave it as an island. Somebody comes and says, I want to juke up some portion of Andros. But Andros also links us to some of the most important fishing grounds in the world. In today's...
Certainly in this hemisphere. I mean, not some, the most important.
The most important. Yeah. In this century, Andros contributes $50 million to Bahamian GDP by people fishing in the same way people fished 2,000 years ago. Just a guy with, you know, some handmade equipment on a rock. And it's able to do that. The world is looking for that. And we have discounted that in the way that we conduct ourselves. So you got the world is Ethiopia, Eritrea, Djibouti, this entire area is under threat of war for water resources. California is under threat for water resources. And Andrus yields water by no dint of our imagination or our intelligence. It's just nature doing it. And yet we haven't prioritized that as sacrosanct. And the resource island, so if the rest of the Bahamas goes into any kind of a tailspin, Andrus is where we would build the future. That's how we should be thinking.
And that's because we don't think in autonomously. Yeah. Folks, you're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black. This is Lester Alcock sitting in for her. I've got in the studio, I've got here.
Absolutely.
And on the line, I've got the world's pastor, Dr. Dave Burrows. Dave, thank you for being with us. Back in a moment.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Other than skin cancer, breast cancer is the most common cancer in women. Breast cancer is also the second leading cause of cancer death in women after lung cancer. Can you help? Yes, you can. You can encourage women to take steps to help lower their risk of developing breast cancer and help find it early, when it might be easier to treat. You can also help connect women facing breast cancer to patient programs and services they might need throughout their treatment. We encourage you to share these messages during Breast Cancer Awareness Month and throughout the year. 2021 has been a powerful reminder that we are all in this together, and our choices and actions have the power to protect the most vulnerable among us in a big way. By working together, we can inspire hope and become a force for good and help create greater awareness during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. To participate in our upcoming supplement, contact Guardian Media's advertising department or your account executive today.
You invest in your children, your home, and your community. But are you investing in your financial future? At CFAL, we specialize in investment management, retirement. Our team of experts never stops helping you plan for tomorrow. Because tomorrow begins today. Call us at 502-7010 to see what our financial advisors can do for you. CFAL. Growing wealth for future generations.
Have you heard about the COVID vaccine raffle? If you are vaccinated against COVID-19, you can enter to win amazing prizes like food store gift certificates, hotel stays, beach excursions, and so much more. Even if you are previously vaccinated, you can still enter to win. The COVID vaccine is free, safe, and protects you from severe COVID-19 infections. Don't delay. Get vaccinated today and enter to win. Visit www.baxbahamas.com to register.
When I had got prostate cancer, my family didn't know if I was going to live at Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Within days, I got an appointment. They presented me with treatment options, and they set up a robotic prostatectomy. When my scans came back, there are no signs of cancer. They don't see you as a number. They see you as a part of family. I'm going on with my life. It's a real gift.
Call us at Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
In view of the global shortage of medical masks, the World Health Organization recommends that medical masks be prioritized for health workers, people who are sick, and their caregivers at home. In consideration of this, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends the use of cloth face masks by the public to slow the spread of COVID-19. In consultation with the Ministry of Health, the Prime Minister of the Bahamas has requested that Bahamians wear cloth face masks outside their homes. Such masks can be utilized in places such as grocery stores and pharmacies. These masks can function to reduce the transfer of respiratory droplets by the wearer. From protection, you are more protected if you follow the recommended preventative measures in addition to wearing the cloth mask. These measures include staying at home, practicing physical distancing at least 6 feet apart from others, washing your hands often for at least 20 seconds, and not touching your face. Our healthcare providers need personal protective equipment while caring for patients. It is important to allow them to have the resources they need to function properly. If the public use cloth face masks, this reduces the chance of having a shortage of medical masks for the healthcare workers. Masks should be used safely and properly. Let us protect ourselves and each other.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back to The Hit Back. This is Lester R. Cox sitting in for the great Nahaja Black. I'm having a conversation with Dr. Gilbert Morris and the world's pastor, Dr. Dave Burrows. Now, gents, I have to read this text, man. I have to read this text. Here's what this person is saying. Ideas are not free, Lester. Ideas are not free in progressive societies. People make millions of their ideas through patents and copyrights. You are absolutely correct when you share ideas with some people in this country, especially those with prominent profiles, they want to say they were instrumental in making it happen. let me read the follow-up from the same person. We have brainwashed an entire society into it has no value. Then we say anybody could have come up with an idea. And it's true. The most valuable patents are the ones where everyone says, why didn't I think of that? Value of ideas.
Yeah. No, there's no question. I mean, It's a problem in small societies generally, but small societies where everything is status making. So, in powerful countries like Finland or Estonia or Singapore, sense making and state making are the most important things.
Sense making and state making. Explain that.
Well, sense making is determining the most rational means for organizing the society through which the maximum number of people benefit at the highest level that they can. So this is sense making that leads to state making or state formation. Our countries tend to run on status making, but status making does not have a second move, right? Because it's terminal, it's self.
Right. So once you don't take a picture with the fella, that's it.
Yeah, it's self defeating. And if you go to big events and you show up there, and you're just there because the U.S. called it. You remember when Mr. Obama was in Jamaica? Some of the leaders were knocking each other out of the way to stand next to him to take a photograph.
Yeah.
Because status making is the most important thing. Being able to show someone standing next to Obama on your phone. I mean, I meet pretty significant people I would say. I mean, every month I could load up the world with photographs of the, but I don't take any photographs. I had a lovely dinner with Dick Gephardt 5 days ago, the former, for 14 years, majority leader in the Congress. Wonderful. He's 81 years old, fit and sturdy and everything. And I could have taken a photo, but what for? We wanted to talk about education and technology and national resources for the United States. And this is a guy who knows everybody in the world. I mean, Dick Gephardt, I mean, when you were... when you were a majority leader, right, you spoke to, you dealt with all issues, foreign policy, you know, economy, education, all these sorts of things, defense, everything. And he's 81, and like Obama, like Mr. Obama, like Mr. Clinton, he just knows everyone. And when guys like this talk, you know, he'll say something like, oh, yeah, I was telling Xi Jinping the other day. So, but they're not trying to impress you. He's trying to frame something for you about where the world is, going.
That's his Jess's word.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Good, all right. Let's take a call and we'll bring you back in. Caller, go ahead. You're on the hit back.
Yeah, bless it, Mr. Cox.
Hey, how are you, man?
How are you, my
Mr.
brother?
Mr. Morris and Pastor Davis. You know, something. It was a very interesting conversation. I always listen when Mr. Dr. Gilbert Morris speaks, and so I can make this quick, and I want him to answer. Because there's something Pastor Burrows had mentioned when he was expanding on the meaning of politicals, right? And so, to Dr. Gilbert Morris, I was wondering if we, like in this economic times, are we moving forward in the oceans monopoly agenda, and also, instead of foreign entities coming here and quantifying our natural resources, have we made any impetus towards quantifying numerically our national resources as something to put on the international market, like, you know, let's say marine resources, you know, forest resources, whatever, just natural resources in general. Have we made any step towards those agendas and ideas as far as providing data on the international arena? And I'll just listen.
Interesting. Hey, thanks for that question, man. That's a good question.
That's a great question. Well, Lester, you're one of the people on your show earlier. You used to say the Bahamas is not a small country.
No, certainly not.
Say that all the time. And if you think about, again, I mentioned Andros freshwater resources, but there's a project by a company called Blue Energy in Japan and in South Korea. And what they do is they mine water from 2,000 feet down, you know, where the microbes have been pushed out and say, you know, less salt and so on. And they pump that up and they do light RO for that mineralization, and then they're now exporting that. Well, if they could do that in Japan and South Korea, we are in a much better position because we have cleaner water.
And So, at 2,000 feet, the salinity of the water is different?
That's my understanding. In fact, it has been explained to me that in some cases, your freshwater freshwater bands running in these. I'm not that up on the science of it and so on, but. But these are things which your university should be leading the world in examining and studying and so on. You should abandon most of the traditional notions of subject disciplines and design disciplines which are directed towards better knowledge of the Bahamas, executable knowledge of the Bahamas. Yeah.
Even schools, though. I know Pastor Dave's church, they had a number of conferences on different things. I mean, you spoke
on WTO. Yeah.
Correct. I remember. You were at Dave's church, right, and you talked about WTO. But churches can also be a part of this autonomous knowledge as well.
Well, BFM has been one of the leading churches in terms of, and I'd let Pastor Dave speak to that, but in the dissemination of, I'm going to say non-religious knowledge, but I don't really mean that in an absolute sense. I mean that in a deflationary sense, in the sense that everything that they teach has a moral impetus and a spiritual impetus to it. But, you know, teaching people about relationships and about child rearing and about, you know, their responsibility as citizens and that sort of thing, I think that's important. I'll let Pastor Dave address that.
Go ahead, Doc.
Okay. Let me just mention a couple things that I think were mentioned earlier. There's no such thing as a poor country. Everything for Earth is in Earth. Every country has all the resources it needs to be successful. There's no lack of resources in the world. What we have in some cases is poorly managed countries or poorly administrated countries, or countries where people are seeking to be elected to positions rather than changing a country. So people are seeking to win an election so that they can get a position, not beginning with the concept that I want to change a country, and in order for me to change a country, I have to be in a position to implement this change that I see. I think when you see someone who comes to office and they have a clear vision for that country, that's somebody who's not necessarily seeking to be elected. They are seeking to change the country. And I think that's what we have to remember that our politicians need to focus on. You know, it can't be about winning an election. Winning an election is important because it puts you in the position to govern. However, before you win an election, you should have a vision for changing the country. You know, so I think the other thing that's important, too, is that the most powerful thing that any country has, and all countries have it, but oftentimes it's not discovered. The most powerful thing I did, when you look at it, what is Atlantis? Atlantis was an idea that came from a man in South Africa.
Right.
That idea could have just as easily come from a Bahamian. But sometimes the problem is our level of exposure, our level of understanding what the possibilities are. So we have to be in a position to first of all, make our primary goal to think. Before you work, your thinking produces all of the elements that you need to work on.
Yeah.
You know, and the, regarding the question about the religious aspect of it, you know, people are very, very confused, I believe, and misunderstand what Jesus was all about. Jesus never said he wanted us to have a church and everybody congregate in the church and they allow everyone else to govern and we sit on the sidelines and just talk about heaven. What Jesus said is, he said, go into all the world. And every world means every avenue of influence.
Make disciples.
So he expects us to go. And then the other thing is, he said, be in the world but not of it. So that means you live in the world, but you don't think like the world. Now, when he says world, he is not talking about the geos. He's not talking about the physical planet.
Yeah.
The world that he's talking about is a philosophy. A way of doing things.
That's
and what
right.
Jesus primarily introduced into the world was new thinking.
Yeah.
You know, he said, you know, you have said this. And then he said, you know, you have said, hate your enemies. But I say to you, love your enemies. What was he doing? He was introducing a new way of thinking that was superior to what existed in the current world.
Right.
And you also heard him made a statement like this. He said, you know, it is said that you should have people serve you. But I'm the greatest of all, and I'm serving people.
Wow.
So he was changing people's thinking. And I think for the church, what the church has to realize is that it's not a religious institution that's supposed to be tucked away somewhere.
Right.
Doc, all right, Doc, we totally out of time. Doc,
oh, you're out of time. Sorry
give me that.
That.
Give me the other four parts of what you're saying very quickly.
Okay.
The first one is recognition.
The first one is recognized. The second one is organized. The third one is strategize. The fourth one is prioritize. And the fifth one is maximize.
Good, Doc, man. I always appreciate you. Thanks a million.
Excellent.
Doc,
excellent.
You want a quick wrap up?
Yeah, just there's a guy called Linnar Vik in Estonia who was attached to the president. And he had one job, to come up with a new idea every day that could advance Estonia.
Wow. Folks, you listen to the Hit Back with Nahaja Black. This is Lester Alcock sitting in for her. You guys have a great weekend.
God bless.